Mostly a protest, but fires have been started. Have a clip to put out there. I had a tab open yesterday that was going to go along with yesterday's episode, an hors d'oeuvre, a side dish, if you will, and I completely forgot it, but I wanted to read it. It was Victor Davis Hanson on Twitter X, and I don't fully 100% agree with everything he says here, but I wanted to read this extended Twitter X post over MSNBC, NBC, Ronan McDaniel, Chuck Todd weeping on set, and Nicole Wallace talking about her sacred airwaves. And I wanted to throw this in yesterday, and I completely forgot to do it. So I want to just kick this off as kind of an addendum to yesterday's episode before I get into a couple other things. Victor Davis Hanson on Twitter X wrote an extended post, because you can do that now, and I'm just going to read this. MSNBC, home to the Russian collusion hoax, the laptop disinformation fraud, the pangolin bat birth COVID-19 virus, and the serial provocateur of John Brennan, and so much more. It was surreal to hear MSNBC grandees damn the idea of Ronan McDaniel as an MSNBC occasional commentator on grounds that she peddled untruths and was just a political flack. Yet, did the network ever have a problem with an anchor like Joy Reid, who brazenly lied, and still does successfully, about her undeniable past homophobic tweets, he's talking about her blog, or the ingrained bias of its former political operators from Nicole Wallace to Chris Matthews? The entire network team ran loudly with a Russian collusion hoax. It hired John Brennan, one of the chief collusion fabricators who they knew had already lied twice under oath, as CIA director, falsely claiming that his CIA had not spied on Senate staff computers, and preposterously claiming not a single collateral death occurred during the Obama-targeted drone assassination spree on the Afghan-Pakistan border. Nor were they bothered that now MSNBC colleague Brennan still kept to his lying. He was a principal in rounding up 51 intelligence authorities on the eve of a presidential debate, and just days before the election to lie that Hunter Biden's undeniably authentic laptop and its emails had all the classic earmarks of Russian involvement, as if Ruskies dreamed up in Moscow the big guy emails and photoshopped all of Hunter's narcissistic naked selfies. Remember, the point of this Anthony Blinken-driven pre-debate farce was to empower Biden in the upcoming debate to refute Trump's accurate reference to Hunter's incriminating laptop and the Biden family criminality. Should we laugh or cry that the now outraged Jen Psaki daily passed off utter fantasies to the American people? It was demonstrably untrue, despite her constant assertions that Biden was never warned of the catastrophic consequences to come of the disastrous decision to flee suddenly from Kabul. Or worse, Psaki once ludicrously claimed that millions of illegal aliens crossing Biden's now non-existent border had no real intention of staying long in the United States. But that said, why would the former RNC chair, Ronan McDaniel, wish to throw her lot in with pravdas like these? Money, perhaps. Exposure, maybe. Gradual rhino transformation into the more lucrative liberal media in the fashion of the former RNC chair Michael Steele's opportunistic metamorphosis, or the unhinged reboot of Joe Scarborough or chameleon Nicole Wallace. These people, despite their monopolies on the media, academia, entertainment, print, Silicon Valley, corporations, foundations, and the administrative state, are deeply insecure to the point of paranoia. They know their agenda offends the majority of Americans, and the more they lie, the less we believe them. And now they fear all their money and machinations may still not be enough in November. That's Victor Davis Hanson. I hope I do him justice reading his monologue, passing that off as my own. No. He says something there at the end that is striking, and I want to start off with today. Yesterday in New York, and I touched on this, but last night we got a glimpse into this fundraiser at Radio City Music Hall that featured celebrities like Lizzo, Lea Michele from Glee, which is a throwback, and I want to go into this, and Jimmy Harrison, the head of the DNC, tweeting out all of these appearances, and then Clinton, Obama, and Biden all come up from the stage to Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run. And I'm sitting here going, this is 2016 all over again. And scary, because while this was happening, while Biden and Obama and Clinton are there and there's people are cheering and it's $250,000, you can get your photo taken with Annie Leibovitz for $100,000. She turns into like the prom photographer, supposedly one of the greatest modern celebrity and entertainment photographers of our age. And then she turns into just a basic prom political prop. All these Hollywood celebrities there, and Lizzo's there, and these musical acts are there. And then Stephen Colbert, who has graduated to full-time political shill, sits down with those three. And there were some whispers about, how is this not problematic for CBS? Now, I know that he's supposed to be clown nose on, clown nose off. But if you've watched Colbert lately, and I played, obviously, that monologue where he just loses it. Is that no, or whatever. Do they tell jokes on the show anymore? Usually he comes out, he tells a political monologue that is anti-Trump or anti-Republican, and then he'll have Elizabeth Warren come on, or a member of the media or whatever, and maybe a celebrity who has a movie coming out, and then maybe a musical act. But there's no skits anymore. As I said, late-night comedy has now transformed into late-night group therapy for libs. But CBS sees absolutely no conflict of interest. There was an interesting take on this. Eli Lake, Free Press. We're going to be talking a bit about the Free Press today. Whatever you want to say about Stephen Colbert, you have to acknowledge his guts. How many other late-night hosts would risk the Hollywood backlash and come out for Biden like this? Mark Caputo, who was NBC Florida, he's now the national political reporter for Bulwark, said, we have a pretty robust media covering media industry, but there's scant coverage about a host of a flagship show on a major network fundraising for a presidential candidate. I wonder why. He's touching on something here, and I've said this in the past, and I am kind of a free speech absolutist in that I don't really agree with every equal time law. But I've talked about this in the past, that if Stephen Colbert is going to use his hour-long, whatever it is, his show where he can go on, he can host, he's the writer, he has a writer's room with him, he can book guests, he can say who he wants, he can do whatever he wants with that hour, and he has chosen to make it into a Democratic Party platform hour. And if we're going to start doing this, there are equal time laws in this country. But I think that this would be an interesting discussion, that if Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers and Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert are all going to transform their late night comedy variety hour into an hour-long platform for Democratic politicians and to push the Democratic Party political message, then I think an equal time law discussion here is warranted. No, you don't have to watch it. You can turn it off and whatever. But there are laws in place, election laws, FEC laws, to prevent this exact kind of thing from one party overtaking airwaves completely. And the excuse they will say is, fucking comedian, what's your problem? Like, come on, you're fucking con, look, MAGA world, you can't take it, you can't take a little comedian. No, because what you're doing isn't comedy, you're not making jokes. You're not Johnny Carson anymore, you think you're Howard Beale. You're going to act. If Stephen Colbert is going to act like a political operative, then CBS should have to be answering ethical questions behind this. And if he's going to act like a serious journalist, or at least like an MSNBC host, then there's serious ethical questions about the nature of his role exactly. Even Bill Kristol and David Axelrod are lamenting the optics of yesterday. And what were those optics? Stephen Colbert hosted Bill Clinton, who I guess is welcome back in polite company, me too, hashtag. Barack Obama and Joe Biden, who incidentally tried to shake hands with an invisible chair, which is why there was no media coverage, and which is why Jamie Harrison and Democrats were allowed to just tweet out excerpts, much to journalists not even caring about that. Oh, they're all on stage together. Ha ha! All united against Trump. I'll get to that. But you had this $250,000 a plate, top-of-the-line fundraiser, and Joe Biden on Twitter yesterday, his team tried to pass it off as a grassroots fundraiser. Yeah, you're just at the you're at the Denny's somewhere in the middle of fucking Nebraska holding a grassroots political rally. Sure. What was interesting is this is the Democratic Party going back to the Hillary Clinton style of campaigning. I'm just surprised the cast of Hamilton wasn't there. While the Democratic Party was embracing their base, Hollywood last night, with three presidents at the star-studded gala and fundraiser that walled off a good chunk of mid-Manhattan where people are just trying to get home. And yeah, there's protesters, and there were anti-Semitic protesters out there screaming kike and Jew and all of these slurs at people just trying to attend. Well, you get what you deserve, I guess. Biden is beholden to the lunatics in his party and the celebrities in his party more so than I've ever seen. He's fraying relations with Israel so he can get votes and pray to God a certain section of Dearborn, Michigan doesn't sit home. And while all of this was going on yesterday, Trump was also in New York. Colbert made a joke that three presidents on one stage and none of them in New York to go to court. And everyone had a laugh about that. You know what Trump was doing in New York yesterday? He attended the wake of a New York City police officer who was killed by someone with 21 prior violent offenses and was allowed to walk on no cash bail. New York's just, we're not going to jail people anymore. Well, he was shot and killed, leaves behind a wife, family. And this has been a big deal. The police union, sort of like how it happened with de Blasio, basically has told city council to stay away from funerals, stay away from memorials, stay away from events, and stay away from the wake. Donald Trump attended that wake yesterday. And he came out afterwards and he gave a brief statement off teleprompter. And I'm not going to play it, but he basically said, I had a chance to meet the family. This is sad. And he had police behind him. And he said, these are some of our finest people. And this just shouldn't happen. And we have to get law and order back in this country. Who do you think wins the optics war yesterday? We have seen this movie in this campaign before. Bill Kristol. An unfortunate day politically for the Democrats. Biden does a fancy New York City fundraiser in the midst of a chaotic left-wing street protest. Looks like limousine liberalism plus the breakdown of law and order. And Trump attends the wake of a slain NYPD police officer on Long Island. Hakeem Jeffries endorses the fire alarm pulling anti-Israel rep Jamal Bowman over the moderate Westchester County Executive George Latimer in the New York 16 Democratic primary. That's Bill Kristol. That wasn't me. David Axelrod responded. Former Obama guy who's accepted into the media now. He says, not wrong, but in the big scheme of things, the $25 million that Biden brings in will probably mean more than the look. These people have learned nothing. Hillary outspent Trump almost 2-1 in 2016. And she spent her time going to New York City celebrity fundraisers with Larry David and the cast of Hamilton and Stephen Colbert and Annie Leibovitz and all of these people. Police unions and ignoring union workers who all of the union bosses, they are in the pocket of the DNC. They tell their people to go vote for Hillary, vote for the Democrats. They'll keep your job here. Oh, well, raise your wage, etc. Union. And that's supposed to be Amtrak Joe. And while they were doing that, Trump was visiting garbage compactor factories. He was visiting Ohio, and he was visiting Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, and Michigan. And all those workers under the unions, those auto workers, those factory workers, those manufacturing workers, they all went in and they voted for Donald Trump. So, Abomarmi, and I agree with this, and I've said this. I talk about turnip moments, and that's not really what this is. But if Trump wins in November, and he wins a state like Michigan or Wisconsin again, and maybe Minnesota or Pennsylvania, this is going to be one of those moments that is going to look back reviled by Joe Biden and his team saying, fuck, we really should not have done that. Biden's bread and butter, Amtrak Joe, here to come after the screaming, yelling, insane billionaire in the White House. Somebody looked really humble yesterday, and it wasn't Joe Biden. And here's the other thing with this. This is what I mean how Joe Biden is beholden. Trump can pretty much go and talk to anyone. Okay, he's not going to go to a teacher's union rally. Okay, he might try. But Biden is literally straining relations with Israel, who was on a war of retaliation to get its hostages back. Because on October 7th, Hamas paraglided into Israel and killed over 1,400 innocent concert goers, men, women, children, including the elderly. And they raped, tortured, set on fire, executed, shot them with rocket launchers in the streets, and kidnapped toddlers. And because of Joe Biden's lunatic fringe base, who was trying to make a moral equivalency between those actions and Israel's military retaliation, Joe Biden has to strain relations because there's a good chunk of Dearborn, Michigan who might sit home. And you know what? Michigan's a state that can turn the election. It's one of those four states. So he has to appease them and get them out to vote. And they're calling him Genocide Joe. Where did you come from? Where did you go? He also can't acknowledge this police officer in New York like Trump can. Because Biden goes out there, and if he says this is a heartbreaking thing, this police, now he's pissed off his Black Lives Matter abolish the police protesting base. They can sit home in New York. Trump's not going to win New York. That's not where I'm going with this. But the optics matter. And here's Trump at a wake, at a very somber wake, and he comes out and he gives a brief statement. The officers, and we have to get this under control. There's no reason this should be happening. And the very same night, what is Joe Biden doing? He's doing this.
This is for Hillary. Dum, 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 like a small boat dum, dum, on the ocean, dum, dum, sending big waves dum, dum, and emotion, dum, like I was single.
I've still got a lot of fight left in me.
I don't need to subject you to the rest of it. You get it. This looks to me right now like 2016 all over again. People talk a lot about Joe Biden's retail politics and his ability to connect by threatening voters and calling them fat. Trump doesn't get enough credit for things like this. Whether this was pre-planned or his people around him or even he said the night of a huge glitzy fundraiser just happens to be the same day of the wake of a New York City police officer who shouldn't be dead. And Trump and his people say, call them up. Ask him if it's okay if I attend. And they say, yes, sir, of course it is. And here's Jamie Harrison and the Obama Celebrity Coalition back in full force. And Bruce Springsteen and Stephen Colbert all gathered around. They're all having a really good time as their base sits outside and threatens Jewish attendees. Chicago is a little bit too on the nose to host the DNC this year. I'll just put it that way. Also, on top of all of that, they all went on a podcast hosted by Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I touched on this yesterday, and Sean Hayes. And they all just went and did this and had a really good time. And Charles Fain Lehman, who's a fellow at Manhattan Institute, he's contributing editor, City Journal, noted that the incumbent is the oldest guy in the photo. And he said, like, fundamentally what happened was Obama was president too early and really messed up the line of succession. And he's right about that. Obama was an anomaly. It was not supposed to happen. That was supposed to be Hillary versus McCain. And I joked with Charles, who I sort of know. I don't know him personally. I said, either way, we would have ended up with McCain versus Obama in 2012. And then we would have ended up with Trump versus Obama in 2016. Fun multiverse we have going there. Here's Biden going on celebrity podcasts. They think they got it again, because how in the hell would we ever go for Trump again? And as Victor Davis Hanson notes, with all of the money and all the machinery and all of the indictments and academia and media and all of everything else, it's still up to the voters. And these kinds of optics matter. You've been listening to the Versus Media podcast, free member version. To get the rest of the podcast, additional segments, as well as comments, questions answered on the podcast as part of the community, please consider joining one of my three subscriber tiers. There's a monthly, then there's a yearly, and then there's a founding tier as well, which I will participate in chats with members weekly and offer some other perks. You're always, of course, welcome to stay a free member here, and there's, of course, no obligation to subscribe. But you should, because that's where all the fun actually happens. This is the Versus Media podcast on Substack, and as usual, don't ever talk to journalists.